IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of All Things Policy. You guys must have been following the developments where India has been sending vaccines all across the world in a bid to control the raging COVID-19 pandemic. There have obviously been questions being asked about whether it makes sense for India to be sending out vaccines when there's so much demand within the country itself. But others have lauded India for being selfless and helping out those in need at the same time. Is this a good move? What are the factors that need to be considered when we are sending vaccines abroad? And is there an opportunity beyond COVID-19 for India to keep on practicing this vaccine diplomacy? To discuss all of these questions with me, I have Pranathi, who is currently interning at Takshashila. Hey, Pranathi.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Shambhavi.
So let's begin with the big question, Pranathi. What exactly is vaccine diplomacy?
So to understand what vaccine diplomacy is, we need to understand what science diplomacy is, first of all. And science diplomacy, we can see that there are essentially three axes to this. So the first one is science in diplomacy, where science gives advice and informs and supports foreign policy objectives. Then you have diplomacy for science, where diplomacy facilitates international scientific collaborations. And finally, you have science for diplomacy, where scientific collaboration and cooperation improves international relations. So vaccine diplomacy is basically the subset of science diplomacy, which encompasses vaccines. And it can encompass, you know, the direct vaccines themselves, but it will also have the implementation of vaccines. It will have how you will be able to get those vaccines to people. All of that comes under the umbrella of vaccine diplomacy.
Right. So you're basically saying this is somewhere where the state is kind of intervening, either using scientific expertise to further foreign policy goals or using foreign policy leverage to further scientific goals. So it could be a give and take. And in this particular case, we are seeing because India has an expertise in at least vaccine manufacture, and now more recently we have seen vaccine research, we could actually leverage that to help further our foreign policy goals or at least create goodwill and protect global health interests, right?
Right, exactly. It's a two-way street. It's using science to further foreign policy and using foreign policy to improve science and research as well.
Right. But why should India be doing this? I mean, like we started, right? We have a big domestic requirement for, particularly for COVID-19 vaccines. We'll come to other vaccines in a bit. So does it make sense that India is also now sending off these vaccines to other places?
I mean, I think COVID-19 is one of the things, is an excellent example of why ensuring global public health is very important, right? An infectious disease outbreak anywhere, like let's say in Wuhan, can reach and potentially harm Indians themselves. So it's in India's interest that we enable vaccinations and prevent, you know, the disease outbreaks in other countries and maintain the public health standards internationally. We're seeing an increase in urbanization. We're seeing an increase in globalization. There's more people traveling across the world today than we have seen any time before in the history of the world. So that maintaining and ensuring that, you know, India is safe means ensuring that the world is safe in that sense.
True. So I guess for public health diseases, particularly for something as contagious as COVID-19, having those artificially made borders might not make sense. And saying that this is my population, this is not, does not really help you secure health for your own populations, right? And also you had made this point about the expiry dates for vaccines. Could you elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we've seen is that vaccines have an expiry date, right? I mean, it might be 6 months, it might be 1 year, but at the end of the day, we have a certain date at which those vaccines are not useful any longer. So we need to make sure that these vaccines that we're using are being, you know, actually used for vaccination rather than simply being stored somewhere and being kept in a storage box, because that would be the worst possible use of the vaccines, simply by saying we want to keep them within our own country. We want them in case something bad happens, and then, or in case there is another outbreak, and then that's never actually used, as opposed to being given and sent to the people that need them the most.
Right. So let's try and reduce wastage as much as possible, and make sure that all vaccine doses that we have manufactured get used up. And perhaps one way to fix the consumption problem is to actually also increase manufacture by itself. But okay, COVID-19 is an exceptional case. Do you think there are other advantages for India practicing vaccine diplomacy in other situations?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, see, like, you also have the humanitarian aspect to it, right? I mean, on humanitarian grounds, it is India's responsibility to be helping out other countries. But then you also have the foreign policy aspect, in which case helping out countries in need can increase the influence that we have within that region of the world, right? So, and it also obviously helps in the international reputation, in ensuring that the world looks at India and sees a partner that is capable and is willing to help us out. And then, I mean, the economic aspect is also quite meaningful, because sending vaccines to foreign countries or sending expertise to foreign countries, that can be used as a tool to open those markets for further Indian products and to allow India to have a foothold within that, you know, within that economy. So there are other parts and other advantages to vaccine diplomacy.
I think overall what I'm getting is that vaccine diplomacy might have a lot of signaling virtue in terms of showcasing India as a leader in science and creating goodwill and creating signaling credibility that can lead to economic opportunities, which is all great. But there also has to be a flip side, right? Are there any risks for us to continue down the vaccine diplomacy path?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are obviously always going to be trade-offs and things that we need to be considering. India needs to make sure that we balance the domestic and international needs. So ensuring that, you know, we don't lose out on vaccinating and ensuring the safety of Indians while just because we're going to be giving off, by giving it off to too many international and foreign, due to foreign policy concerns, is something that we need to make sure that we balance. So essentially, we need to balance our domestic needs with our international desires. And then there's also a threat to private operations that we need to be looking at, because state intervention or state overreach can lead to, you know, manufacturers being disincentivized to, you know, have their manufacturing facilities in India. And I mean, I think the main point is that in order to do all of this, India needs to have a very meaningful and robust framework for vaccine diplomacy, right? Something that will allow India to have quick, efficient, and meaningful understanding of when and where to send these vaccines to. So that, I think, looking past COVID-19, looking past this particular pandemic, we need to be understanding how and where we can send these vaccines, just so that we can do it as simply and as effectively and help as many people as we, you know, as we can.
Right. The first thing that you mentioned, right, about international balancing international and domestic needs. I mean, is that a problem mostly of COVID-19? Because we have, obviously, the demand is much, much higher than the supply. But obviously, for more routine vaccinations, we should be able to forecast demand and manufacture enough doses so that at least that trade-off gets negated.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the case of when you have an actual pandemic, an acute pandemic like this one, that's going to be quite different. And like the balancing of domestic and international needs is always there. But I mean, there is always the chance for a public health outbreak, right? I mean, we think that cholera, oh, it's not something that really affects a huge percentage of the population nowadays. But still, I mean, there, knock on wood, there could be a public health outbreak within India at any point in time. So we need to make sure that we have the stores necessary to handle such an outbreak if ever such a awful crisis occurred.
Right. So how do we go about doing this, right? How can India actually approach vaccine diplomacy. We have seen India, for example, now play a part in COVAX. We have seen India send vaccines off to individual countries as well. What works? What doesn't work? Why one approach over the other?
I mean, I think there are two main approaches that we've identified for this, one being a multilateral approach and one being a bilateral approach. So in a multilateral approach, we're basically discussing how India can get involved in with multiple countries working together for a single purpose through usually an international agency. It could be ASEAN, it could be the World Health Organization, as you mentioned, COVAX. We also have Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. So this is usually a really good and advantageous approach for when there is a certain country that requires extensive international aid, or when we're looking at something that the vaccines necessary, there's a very high cost to them, right? So India alone maybe might not be capable of or wish to foot that bill. So when we're looking at something like, you know, a global humanitarian crisis, like maybe the Ebola crisis, there might be a low gain in terms of the reputational gain or the actual like foreign policy exposure for India, because the credit is like, I mean, you're going to be usually working through an international agency, but the international like community by working together can usually achieve more ambitious and more complex ideals than that India could alone, because of numerous aspects to that. The second approach to this would be the bilateral approach, in which India approaches another country directly, and usually this is something that we've seen India participating more in during the COVID-19 pandemic, in which India is basically giving the vaccines directly to countries in the region through the neighborhood first policy, to other countries that might need them, like Brazil. So this is basically, it's useful in areas of high geopolitical interest to India. It's also, it basically gives India that international exposure and accolade that you wouldn't be getting through the multilateral one. So I mean, both have plus points and minus points. I think the best way of moving forward is to ensure that India balances both and doesn't rely on one over the other.
Right. So now if we know which country we want to send a vaccine, like help through the use of our vaccine expertise, what are the different things that India can really do? Or is it just that we manufacture vaccines and we can send it across?
Well, I mean, manufacturing is definitely India's traditional strength. Like right now, India manufactures almost 3 billion vaccines every year and exports 2 billion of them. But more recently, India has been getting involved in research where, if you're looking at something for like neglected diseases, India can promote research in those areas and fill a gap that's left empty by maybe you're looking at developed countries where that illness is not necessarily as acute of a concern as it is in India. And I mean, we see this with the rotavirus vaccine that was, done in 2015 by Bharat Biotech. Mm-hmm. Like India has not leveraged its research sector as well as it could have. And, it's expanding. And that's what we should all, be focused on as well. I mean, research is one of the things in which India is focused on kind of expanding its scope. But there's obviously also other ones, right? Like you're looking at technology transfer. You're looking at, as we see right now with the Serum Institute of India and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, there was technology transfer done from Oxford AstraZeneca to Serum Institute of India. And then, so now SII is basically creating these vaccines. So down the road, it would obviously be very meaningful and very helpful if India can basically be on the flip side of this particular arrangement, right?
So like we are doing research in public universities and are able to transfer some of that technology to other countries where the vaccines might also be needed.
Right, exactly. so that our strength is not necessarily solely in manufacturing, but also kind of more diversified.
Right. And obviously you also speak about expertise in vaccinations per se.
Yeah, through the Universal Immunization Program. Yeah, so that, I mean, that's basically built, that program is built an infrastructure within the country that, you know, it allows hot, wet, remote climates to have access and, you know, be able to disseminate these vaccines, you know, to even like children and to, you know, like the Tdap vaccines and these kind of things. So, by like the knowledge to overcome geographical and logistical challenges is something that India has, which not many developed countries like the US or the EU would have. So that experience and knowledge is basically something that we should be reaching out to and helping other LMICs with.
Right. Okay. So these are the things we can actually collaborate over. But there must be some sort of governance structure already in place, right? We saw, for example, with the COVID vaccines, we saw India and South Africa asking for waiver of intellectual property rights, if I'm correct. So there must be some regulatory framework under which we need to do this. How simple or complex is that going to be?
It's quite complex as a regulatory landscape. We, as you know, we've spent quite a while, you know, researching this, and it's not simple. Especially when we're looking at an international landscape, a lot of this, the details arise because we're looking at exactly how we can maintain an international standard and ensure that no one country is, you know, adhering to a better one or a less one. So overall, there are three overarching international agencies, the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, and the World Intellectual Property Organization. So of these three, as you mentioned, with the patent waiver that India and South Africa have been pushing for since, I think it was in December, they basically, all of these agencies where we might be talking about TRIPS or anything like that, they tend to fall under the broad umbrella of the World Health, World Trade, and World Intellectual Property Organizations. So it's like, if we're going, the more in detail that we go, the more complex it seems. But the, you know, there are three overarching ones that we see for the international regulations. And then the domestic ones are quite, there doesn't seem to be a very clear understanding of exactly which responsibility falls under which particular agency when we're talking about domestic governance within India. There are many departments and they encompass many different roles. So we're talking about the actual vaccine research and development that would probably come under the Department of Science and Technology, but you have the Central Drug Standard Control Organization that actually regulates and approves the vaccines. And then you have the Ministry of External Affairs for determining, you know, the foreign policy objectives and actually sending these and exporting these vaccines. So we need, I mean, I think one of the things that we've realized through our research is that we need a very clear and kind of streamlined way for all of these agencies to work together in times of crises.
Right. And what factors do you think are going to essentially guide vaccine diplomacy? As in, is it going to be, so you said, spoke about India's geopolitical interest, right? Are there other such factors that will influence either the aid, the kind of aid that we give, or the approach that we take for giving out that aid?
Well, the technological capacity of the target country is something that we need to be looking at. We can't just be focused on what, you know, our interest is. We need to look at what we can offer to the other country. So that, I think, is something that's quite, that we'll need to be focused on. But there's also obviously the time frame of the scenario. Are we interested in more long-term, you know, help to that country? Are we interested in more of a short-term, just a direct offer of vaccines, like as we've been doing, as we've been giving with the COVID-19 vaccines? Or are we looking at something like building, you know, long-term ties, or doing, you know, research collaborations or non-governmental tie-ups? Like, what exactly are focuses within India and what we want to give is also of importance to this particular, to the kind of vaccine diplomacy that we should be, you know, looking at here.
Right. So I think there's a bunch of things we can do. Before I end, I have one final question for you. Is vaccine diplomacy new? Is it something COVID-related? Or has it been around since vaccines were actually discovered and started being manufactured?
Yeah, vaccine diplomacy has been around since pretty much vaccines were discovered. Because when we're talking about usually the first vaccine that we say was invented was Edward Jenner's smallpox vaccine in 1798. And then in 1803, like as an example, Napoleon essentially went to war against England. So, but Napoleon vaccinated all of his troops against smallpox. And then in 1805, Edward Jenner wrote a letter to Napoleon, basically requesting that Napoleon release two of Jenner's friends from a French prison. And Napoleon, despite being at war against England, and despite Edward Jenner obviously being English, Napoleon agreed, and two of Jenner's colleagues were released from a French prison and brought to England simply because of what Edward Jenner was, because of Edward Jenner's request. So one of the like things is vaccines have always been a tool that has allowed people to barter for larger things. It could be a very direct thing, like, you know, between Edward Jenner and Napoleon. It could be something a little bit larger, like we're looking at the U.S. and the USSR that worked together in the 1950s and 1960s at the height of the Cold War to develop an oral polio vaccine. So when we're looking at all of these, it's quite clear that vaccine diplomacy is not something new. But having that framework and making it an official part of India's foreign policy and the ability to, you know, use and leverage that is something that has not been done on this kind of a scale before. So that is, I think, something that is novel, is very exciting. And if we can, you know, actually do it, can, you know, open up new avenues for foreign policy.
Right, identify more opportunities. Just make sure that any opportunity that arises, we can grasp it pretty quickly. Thanks, Pranati. Thank you all for listening in, and do stay tuned in for more episodes of All Things Policy.
The Takshashila Institution is an independent, nonpartisan think tank and a school of public policy. We have education programs lasting one semester and 1 year that are tailored specifically for people like you. They are all online and you can take them from anywhere. Admissions are now open for our 12-week graduate certificate program in public policy, defense and foreign affairs, technology policy, and health and life sciences. Visit takshashila.org.in/courses to find out more. If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com. or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.